I'm Dave Heller, and this is Newsworks Tonight. Ahead this evening, Langston Hughes' classic Christmas play hits Norristown. First, the Philadelphia Land Bank officially has its first deposit, as WHYY's Tom McDonald reports.
Mayor Michael Nutter says the land bank will help put together unused properties and get them into the hands of those who will reuse them productively. He's happy the bank will no longer be empty.
We submitted the deeds of 150 properties to the Records Department, transferring ownership from the Philadelphia Housing Development Corporation to the Philadelphia Land Bank inventory.
And unlike many city records, those deeds were deposited electronically into the land bank. City Council President Darrell Clark says the goal is to bring in more money to the city by returning properties to the tax rolls.
To the person that has the condominium or lives in another neighborhood that has some level of wealth, guess what? I could reduce your taxes. So when you explain it to them like that, you expand the base on the entire city of Philadelphia, I'm able to make sure that everybody gets to take advantage of the new revenue coming to the city. So this is a very significant, far beyond what people think.
Nick Scafidi runs the land bank. He says there's a lot of work involved in clearing liens and making the properties desirable.
We're able to transfer those properties with insurable titles and give new owners the confidence to move forward.
The bank is expected to sell its first properties by summer. I'm Tom McDonald, WHYY News.
Philadelphia City Council is expected to vote tomorrow on a new franchise agreement with Comcast. The 15-year deal could provide for new low-cost internet for thousands of Philadelphians. Though it could also mean that the cable giant will soon have a new job managing all of city government's data, as WHYY's Bill Hangley explains.
Advocates say the proposed new franchise deal with Comcast could be the best in the country. Hannah Jane Sassaman of the Media Mobilizing Project says it offers concrete benefits to communities across Philadelphia.
If this franchise passes on Thursday, we're going to see a massive, unprecedented expansion of affordable internet.
The proposed franchise gives Comcast access to city streets and other public infrastructure. Under the deal, Comcast would not only pay the city a franchise fee, but also provide more low-cost internet, more public access channels, and more local job training. The franchise would also create a new business relationship between the city and Comcast. The deal proposes that Comcast build a $9 million data network for the city and then get hired to run it. Exactly how much that will cost in the years to come is not spelled out in the agreement. Lance Haver handles consumer affairs for City Council.
I don't know if that is knowable because I don't know if we know how we're going to use the system in the future.
Haver says Comcast's new system would connect more than 200 city buildings, including libraries and recreation centers. He says that means better services for residents and probably new costs for the city.
Every one of these 225 locations can become a Wi-Fi hotspot, that we can help kids with their homework, that we can help seniors, and we have to expect the more use we have, the higher the cost.
City officials have said very little about this proposed new data network, and Comcast referred all questions to the city. But the network is clearly an important part of the deal. A clause in the franchise says if Comcast doesn't manage the city's data, it won't boost spending on public access channels. For WHYY News, I'm Bill Hangley.
The reach of Pennsylvania's so-called Porngate scandal now extends to a high-profile homicide case in Philadelphia. A motion filed today alleges that an embroiled prosecutor racially targeted the demolition contractor convicted in connection with 2013's deadly building collapse. As WHYY's Aaron Moselle reports, a judge will decide whether that's grounds for acquitting Griffin Campbell of all charges.
In October, a Philadelphia jury found Campbell guilty of involuntary manslaughter for his role in the collapse at 22nd and Market Streets that killed six people and injured 13 more. Campbell's lawyer, Bill Hobson, is now asking a judge to drop all charges or give his client a new trial. His reason, Assistant District Attorney Frank Fina, one of three prosecutors under fire for exchanging sexually explicit and racially offensive emails. Hobson says Fina supervised the grand jury investigation into the building collapse that found two African Americans criminally culpable, but none of the white decision makers above them.
The entire grand jury indicting process is tainted. There's a clear pattern of a selective racial prosecution in this case.
In July, excavator operator Sean Benscott pleaded guilty to involuntary manslaughter. Architect Plato Marinakis was granted immunity for participating in the grand jury and Campbell's trial. Richard Bassiano, the building's owner, has never been criminally charged. A A spokesman for Philadelphia District Attorney Seth Williams says the office is reviewing the motion and cannot comment further. Assistant District Attorney Jennifer Selber, who prosecuted Campbell's case, has rejected Hobson's claims that his client and Benskop are scapegoats.
The case against these two men were charged based on the evidence, and the case will be litigated based on the evidence on its merits, not based on social status or politics.
Campbell and Benskop are scheduled for sentencing in early January. As part of the motion, Hobson also wants a delay in sentencing until a ruling comes down. I'm Aaron Mozell, WHYY News.
If you're an aspiring politician, you can spend years doing constituent services, helping people with their problems one at a time. But if you become mayor, you can finally get beyond that and focus on the big picture, right? WHYY's Katie Culinary reports that maybe not. It depends on the mayor.
At a town hall meeting in Northeast Philadelphia last week, Estela Hernandez broke down as she told Mayor-elect Jim Kenney how the police pulled her over on the way to the event. Hernandez, an undocumented immigrant who only spoke Spanish, said through a translator that the police confiscated the car because the driver didn't have a license.
I have three kids who are 11, 9, and 6. The 6-year-old is asthmatic, and they kicked us all out of the car while they took it on our way to get to this meeting.
After the meeting, Kenny's staff helped Hernandez get the car back and even paid from their own pockets to help register and insure it. Recently, Kenny told a room full of business executives he wants to be the kind of mayor who helps people with their problems and pays attention to the details.
Our commissioners are going to have a really tough time with me driving around the city or walking around the city because I'm on the phone all the time. This is ridiculous. I mean, look at the street closure, the sidewalk closure. It's driving me nuts.
But how many problems can one mayor handle, especially when you're running a city of 1.5 million people? More than you'd think, says former Philadelphia Mayor Ed Rendell.
You don't go looking to help the one person at a time, but if they find you, you try to help.
Of course, these problems aren't just the mayor's alone to fix.
People would call, my trash hasn't gotten picked up, my neighbor's dog is barking.
Robin Schatz was Rendell's constituent services director. She says the requests aren't all trivial either.
This young woman called me one day crying, and she didn't know what to do because her husband was abusive. And I told her what she needed to do to get help.
Rendell says even as the city grows and improves, there are always some people left behind.
For 25% of the city, they live in poverty. They live in despair often. And it's that 25% that you wish you could help. And you do your best and help as many as you can. But it's extraordinarily frustrating.
And in the era of social media, departing Mayor Michael Nutter says there are more ways than ever for people to get in touch.
Everyone believes in this city that the mayor is in charge of everything, is responsible for everything, and can fix everything.
The key, Nutter says, is managing your time and knowing which problems you can fix and which you can't. A lesson from the mayor to the rest of us. Katie Culinary, WHYY News.
Turning to this evening's headlines... Pennsylvania Attorney General Kathleen Kane is suing one of the nation's largest producers of natural gas over claims that it cheated thousands of landowners who signed drilling leases with the company. The suit alleges that Oklahoma City-based Chesapeake Energy Corporation tricked landowners into signing one-sided leases in the early years of the Marcellus Shale drilling boom and then improperly deducted certain post-production expenses from landowner royalties. Landowners have been complaining for years about Chesapeake's business practices. To make way for the lawsuit, Kane is seeking to modify a pending settlement agreement between Chesapeake and thousands of landowners. The first round of grants is being awarded from a $48 million fund endowed by Penn State University to combat child sexual abuse. The Pennsylvania Commission on Crime and Delinquency voted to give 44 entities $3.4 million collectively. The money will expand child advocacy centers, improve access to trauma therapists, and help people get counseling in underserved areas, among other things. Penn State agreed to pay the money under a settlement with the NCAA over its handling of the Jerry Sandusky child sexual abuse scandal. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie has signed a new law slashing the state's 7% sales tax on boats. Christie signed the measure today after it passed in the Assembly earlier this week. It previously passed in the state Senate. The sales tax will be reduced to 3.5% starting next month. Lawmakers say the legislation will be a boon to boat mechanics, manufacturers, and marina operators who suffer from slumping sales lost to other states. Partly cloudy, 52 degrees at 6:16. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. Overcast skies this evening, low overnight 46 degrees. Tomorrow, partly sunny, Thursday's high 58. Partly sunny days Friday and Saturday, high both days in the low 60s. Still ahead, New Jersey Governor and Republican presidential candidate Chris Christie's long-term plan to gain endorsements in New Hampshire is finally paying off.
They know how to organize, they know how to work, and they're going to help me get out the vote. Not only that, but they're also going to get a lot of other people to give me a second look.
Newsworks Tonight continues on WHYY.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY, Philadelphia's musical holiday tradition. The Philadelphia Orchestra's glorious Sound of Christmas. The Philadelphia Orchestra and conductor Bramwell Tovey present sparkling carols, classic favorites, and more. Holiday tickets and gift certificates at philorc.org or at 215-893-1999. December 17th, 18th, 19th, and 20th at the Kimmel Center. The glorious Sound of Christmas with the Philadelphia Orchestra. 17 generous Mercury Society members, people who donate $1,200 or more each year to WHYY, challenge you to support the programs you love right now. If 2,015 people make donations by Friday, December 11th, they will give us a combined $35,000. $35,000 is no small matter. Visit WHYY.org to make your gift and help us meet this challenge today.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie is enjoying a sudden spike in the polls in New Hampshire, the first in the nation primary that he hopes will catapult him to compete in other states. Though his return to relevance in the presidential race is the culmination of a strategy gradually implemented with roots in his 2013 re-election victory for governor. Matt Katz of New Jersey Public Radio reports.
Until a few weeks ago, Chris Christie's efforts in New Hampshire seemed almost futile. Then, three things happened. First, a viral video about his friend's death from a drug overdose. Heroin is an epidemic in New Hampshire, and his video struck an emotional chord.
When a year and a half ago on a Sunday morning, Mary Pat and I got the call that we'd been dreading forever, that they found him dead in a motel room with an empty bottle of Percocet and an empty quart of vodka. 52 years old.
Then came Paris, Christie's tough guy talk, and his experience as a U.S. attorney who once prosecuted terrorism cases gave him new appeal because conservatives in New Hampshire list national security as their top concern.
Our world war is happening right now, and it's been happening.
His aggressive approach to national security earned him an endorsement from the biggest newspaper in New Hampshire, the Union Leader. But it is other endorsements of people few outside of New Hampshire have ever even heard of that may be most important to his overall strategy, like Renee Plummer, a political power broker and real estate developer in the Seacoast region of the state.
To win the Plummer primary is like it's a really good prelude to February 9th.
She knows lots of people, and Christie has worked it. Phone calls, texts. He even came over to her house for dinner. Last week, he trumpeted her endorsement at an event in front of local and national media. Christie has been rolling out lots of endorsements like these in recent days. A former New Hampshire congressman, state representatives, local sheriffs. After that viral video on heroin and his tough talk on terrorism, these endorsements are the third major reason why Christie may be making a comeback. The endorsement strategy has a familiar New Jersey ring to it.
I am proud to offer our endorsement for a second term to our great governor. I look forward.
I'm standing here this morning to say publicly my support of Governor Chris Christie and his reelection campaign.
This is why the Essex County Chiefs of Police Association voted at our meeting of April 24th, 2013,
Landing endorsements is campaign strategy 101 for anyone. But Christie in 2013 wanted Democrats and unions to endorse him for re-election in order to score a big victory that could set him up as a presidential candidate. One of his key aides securing those New Jersey endorsements was a political operative named Matt Mowers, who now runs his campaign in New Hampshire. When Christie first arrived in the state on June 30th as a presidential candidate, Mowers was the first person the governor hugged. Last week, when Christie's wife, Mary Pat, looked for an aide to take her coat during a meet and greet at a diner, Mowers was right there. And when a woman told Christie she wanted to attend a closed-door event,
"You see Mr. Mowers, he'll bring you in as a member of staff."
Mowers worked on both of Christie's gubernatorial campaigns. And in between, he was an official in the governor's Intergovernmental Affairs Unit, where he drew criticism from Democrats for seeming to solicit endorsements for Christie's re-election on the public's dime. Mowers, in fact, was in charge of getting the endorsement from the mayor of Fort Lee, New Jersey. After the mayor said no, other Christie appointees allegedly closed the lanes to the George Washington Bridge to retaliate, causing days of traffic in adjacent Fort Lee. That led to the Bridgegate scandal.
I had no knowledge or involvement in this issue, in its planning or its execution, and I am stunned.
By then, Mowers was in New Hampshire, where Christie's top advisors helped him land a job running the New Hampshire Republican Party. That gave Team Christie a foothold in the all-important presidential primary state in 2013, long before any other candidate. In his time there, Mowers earned the Republicans' trust and met lots of political players, like Renee Plummer.
You know, relationships matter. It really does.
When Mowers started running Christie's New Hampshire campaign, his contacts became Christie's contacts. The governor then did the heavy lifting, incessantly going after endorsement targets, calling and texting, even while back home in New Jersey.
You know, I think it's a way that keeps me close in states like New Hampshire and Iowa, where you can only be there a certain amount of time, so continuing to stay in front of people is a good thing.
And now that the endorsements are rolling in, they provide the hook for campaign events as local media cover the endorsement announcements. Christie can also tap into the networks of local folks that these supporters know.
And they know how to organize, they know how to work, and they're going to help me get out the vote. Not only that, but they're also going to get a lot of other people to give me a second look, which is a good thing.
While Mowers was attending local GOP dinners and club meetings as director of the New Hampshire State Party, he met Jim McConaughey, treasurer of the Concord Republican Committee. The treasurer was taken with the young operative from New Jersey. Mowers even got McConaughey and his wife tickets to a sold-out Republican event earlier this year. That's another page from Christie's playbook from his re-election campaign, when Mowers gave American flags from Ground Zero to mayors targeted for endorsements. The Jersey-style charm offensive worked in New Hampshire. McConaughey and his wife are now volunteering for Christie's campaign.
You know, he encouraged us to come and listen to Governor Christie, and we felt like, you know, we really need to do this. So we did. We went to a town hall in Pembroke. That's the first time we'd seen him at a town hall meeting. And he was just terrific.
Mowers shuns media attention and goes mostly unnoticed by national reporters. But after the Christie entourage left a campaign stop at a diner last week, I saw Mowers stick around, gathering a group of wealthy New Jersey campaign donors in a corner of the diner. They had flown up here to check on their investment, and I listened in as Mowers assured them that Christie was doing great.
We have the endorsement of former Congressman Bill Zell to be put out tomorrow. A few others that people are going to start to see as a moment of clarity here.
The recent spate of endorsements, Mowers told the donors, were helping voters to realize that Christie is the best alternative to Donald Trump. 2 years after Christie stashed his secret weapon here in New Hampshire, the offensive is finally showing signs of success. Matt Katz.
The poet Langston Hughes wrote the show Black Nativity to represent his African-American culture in the Christmas story. For years, it was a staple at Freedom Theater on Philadelphia's North Broad Street. A young Ozzie Jones was its first director there, and he's back to direct the version currently on stage at Theater Horizon in Norristown. Newsworks theater blogger Howard Shapiro offers this review.
Black Nativity works like no other popular holiday show I know because it concentrates on the biblical story of Christmas and not Grinches who steal it or Santas who appropriate it or anything like that. At Theater Horizon in Norristown, it's an electrifying evening of energy and hope in its two parts. A first half that retells the story of Jesus' birth and a second half set in modern time and focusing on Jesus' legacy. Both halves are performed by the same standout cast, accompanied by a three-piece band and some dynamite African drums. Black Nativity is high-class putty in a director's hands. It's a mixture of gospel songs, traditional carols, and Langston Hughes's words. And directors have great leverage in how they set the second half that reflects Jesus in modern times. The director, Ozzie Jones, chooses to set it in a battered New Orleans church just after Hurricane Katrina has hit, with the cast playing congregants and helpers who clean up and also break into prayer. It's a gospel meeting with a plot that piles on so many issues about its congregants that it teeters on the melodramatic. The music is what makes the second half work, no matter where it's set in different productions. At Theater Horizon, it includes gospel pieces like There's a Leak in This Old Building and There is Nothing Like the Presence of the Lord. Jen Rose choreographed the complex, dynamic dancing that runs through the show, and each of the 10 cast members gets a chance in the dance spotlight. Black Nativity celebrates Christmas in the old-fashioned way. It's unabashedly religious and a refreshing piece of theater in that sense. It runs through December 13th at Theater Horizon in Norristown. For WHYY, I'm Howard Shapiro.
And finally this evening, as the most populous county in the Commonwealth, Philadelphians are accustomed to being at the top of Pennsylvania lists. The Liquor Control Board has just taken us down a peg in its latest annual report of retail sales. Allegheny County, home to Pittsburgh, had $43 million more in alcohol sales this year than did Philly, that despite having several hundred thousand fewer residents. So what are we spending those dollars on? Overall, Pennsylvanians prefer vodka over any other liquor or wine. But the number one item turns out to be Fireball. Sales of the cinnamon whiskey have doubled this year. And the total tab racked up by Pennsylvanians this year, the LCB took in $2.2 billion, and that obviously doesn't include those sales in nearby states. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas, with help today from Brett Rader. Find us on iTunes or listen at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.
Newman University supports WHYY and encourages listeners who are looking to change life direction to discover the master's degree in pastoral clinical mental health counseling. The program can help prepare adults for professional licensure and roles in community counseling. Designed to integrate psychology and spirituality, this ecumenical program is open to people of all faith traditions. Details at newman.edu/WHYY. Newman University proudly supports WHYY.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk about gun violence and mass shootings with Mark Fulman, National Affairs Editor at Mother Jones Magazine. He leads an investigative team covering gun violence and in 2012 started a database collecting information about mass shootings. His latest article is about threat assessment teams trying to prevent such shootings. Join us.
Tonight at 7 on WHYY-FM.
Frederick Living supports WHYY. Frederick Living, a continuing care retirement community nestled in the beautiful countryside of Montgomery County, is proud to announce the expansion of their campus. The meadows at Frederick Living will consist of 55 cottages clustered in an innovative design based on the pocket neighborhood concept. Frederick Living is now taking reservations. Visits can be scheduled by calling 610-754-7878. That's 610-754-7878. Frederick Living. Live well.